Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. My co-host and the producer of Right Here, Right Now is Andy Lowe. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Dr. Tim, and welcome back.
Well, thank you. Did you have a safe, sound, and fun Memorial Day weekend?
Well, I tried to avoid safe and sound, but it was definitely fun.
Uh-oh, there's a story there. Did you go into a triathlon or something?
No, not this weekend. This week was just training, but, you know, we were out on Lake Lanier, and I got to tell you, you take your life in your own hands when you get out on that lake with some of the people that are out there. You know, there's not really much of a requirement to operate a boat out on that lake, and so you put a lot of people with no specific operating requirements and alcohol. And
I was going to say, with some impairment along the way.
Yeah, it's an interesting mix.
I'll bet it does. Well, you know, Andy, you and I were talking earlier that I'm going to introduce a new segment for Right Here, Right Now today's, and I'm just mentioning it now to set the stage for the anticipation for those who may be listening live.
I know. I can't wait to hear what the new segment's going to be all about.
Okay. Well, on Right Here, Right Now, on the website for this week, we've titled this show, When One Genre Is Not Enough. That sounds impressive, doesn't it? I think so.
At least a fun word to say.
Yeah, oh, I love it. Yeah. Well, most guests on Right Here, Right Now, and most first-time authors do the happy dance when they get their first book written. And some go on to write two, three, or more books. And they all tend to stay in the same genre. Now, all of my books that I've written have been nonfiction, but my first books had a religious theme, and my recent books deal with writing. But today we're going to talk about what is it like to write in different areas, or even to be a ghostwriter. Kindred Howard has written over 30 social studies books used by schools in 9 states. He has been a ghostwriter for several projects, and his newest book is Caveman in Babyland, What New and Expecting Mummies Should Know About New Daddies So That They Won't Kill Them. That title got my attention, I gotta tell you. Kindred is the founder of Family Upward and the organization's lead marriage, parent, and family life coach. Family Upward is an organization devoted to building stronger families. And we hope by the time we're done today that we will be swimming in insights from Kindred on how to write textbooks, self-help books, and the challenges of being a ghostwriter or using one. Welcome, Kindred.
I appreciate you having me, Tim. Thanks a lot.
Well, we're going to have fun, just you and me, and Andy chimes in from time to time. So we have to keep an eye on him, all right?
Hey, I totally understand. My wife feels the same way about me, so she's always got to keep an eye on me as well.
Well, then we know what
also,
we're doing.
It's not that often someone uses a important sounding word like genre in a conversation that involves me, so I appreciate you doing
I'll
that.
I bet you did.
Too,
I thought, yeah. Let's say, we try to make our guests happy. All right. Well, tell us about the start of your writing journey. What motivated you to write? What was your first book? What was it like?
You know what? For me, writing was something I always enjoyed and always liked, and people would tell me that I was very good at it, could communicate well. I never really envisioned making a living at it because I just envisioned this huge process, you know, this publishing process or whatever that you had to go through and this gauntlet you had to run. It took a lot of time, a lot of energy, all probably for the end result of hearing somebody say, no, not interested, or you're not talented enough. So I never really thought about that. And then a few years ago, back in 2006... I had actually been in the full-time ministry for 11 years,
mm-hmm.
And I came out of the ministry as a profession, not wanting to do that for my paycheck anymore. And in the course of looking for work, I started teaching a little bit, and my wife came across, of all things, you don't hear about this too often anymore, but an ad in the paper, not online, but in
oh
the
my.
Paper.
Oh, my.
With an educational publishing company out of Woodstock, Georgia, called American Book Company. Had a very good reputation. They were looking for people to help write a social studies book. And they had just advertised that they needed people to help write chapters. So my wife actually encouraged me, as most things. My wife's responsible for the good things that happen in my life.
And you're responsible for all the bad, right?
Exactly. Got it. And as long as I keep that straight, our marriage works real well.
I got it. Okay.
But so I wrote a sample chapter on a topic, sent it in. They liked it, hired me to write the actual chapter. About a month after that, they called me and asked me if I'd be willing to come in and talk to them. And I went in, and basically they gave me the job of writing and or editing and overseeing all of their social studies book projects.
Oh, my goodness.
And they, yeah, so I fell into a pretty good gig right off the bat. I was had always loved history, had majored in, you know, not majored in history, but taken a lot of social studies related topics in college. They actually helped get me set up on taking my master's in history at Georgia State University after that. And I basically just took that on. And it was a good gig because I would write the books, edit the books, and then they handled all the marketing. They were already had inroads into marketing to schools. And what I do still for them, they're still a client of mine now, even though I'm independent, I don't work for them full time, is I still write most of their social studies books. And then they those are geared towards helping kids in different states pass standardized tests. So I'll write, say, I'm working on a social studies book for eighth graders in Kentucky that covers only material that they will be responsible for on their particular test. I do that for high school, do that for middle school, and sometimes lower school levels. So that's how I got started, and that's a gig I'm still running with right now.
And that really gives you a specific target audience, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's always nice when you can just focus on writing and you mm-hmm. know someone else is handling all the book sales.
Sure, sure. Well, one of the things I think of is, well, when I work with my clients, two things I ask of them to begin with, 150-word synopsis, who's your target market?
Right.
And usually they come in with the world as their target market, and we have to work from there. You are told specifically an eighth-grade class in Kentucky.
Yeah.
That's pretty specific, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it helps. And I know what you mean, too, because obviously that has led to other writing opportunities for me, my own freelance writing,
mm-hmm.
As well as writing about, you know, topics of marriage and parenting and family, which is I'm very passionate about. But you mentioned I do some of the ghostwriting as well. I've run into a similar thing that you just mentioned is one of the first things that I have to deal with a lot of times, like you said, with clients, is helping them think about, okay, who's the book for? Who's mm-hmm. going to read it?
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing, yeah.
30 books. That's a lot. What's the secret?
Yeah. it is. That sounds like more work than it is because you have to keep in mind there's only so many ways to tell about the Declaration of Independence.
That's
so
true.
So the good thing is I did a lot of original writing mm-hmm. in the first couple years. And I still do some original writing for those book projects. Mm-hmm. But because I wrote all those books and because it's with the company, obviously we own all the copyright. So I can reuse bits of it sometimes.
Okay.
So for instance, like the book I'm working on now, I'm doing some original stuff, but I'm able to do a lot of just kind of copy and paste some of my old work that I've done for other states that still mm-hmm. fits the bill for this and move that. So it's a lot of writing early on, but the more I've gone, now the quicker I can turn stuff out because I'm able to reuse a lot of material as well.
Oh, that's sweet. It's called evergreen material, right?
And I always tell people who write, because you know as well as I do, a lot of times early in your writing career, you do a lot of freebies. You
yes.
have to for people
oh, yeah,
to read your
absolutely.
Stuff, get up and running. I always tell people, remember, the stuff that you're doing for free now is stuff you can probably sell later. So
that's
stuff you might
point.
Be doing for blogs and things now to get exposure, to get out
mm-hmm.
there, you know, later on you might be able to actually sell those as articles to small newspapers or to online publications that are willing to pay you or that sort of thing. So
mm-hmm.
make sure you're holding on to that material because, yeah, you're doing it for free, but the flip side of that is you haven't sold your copyrights away to anybody either. So you can reuse that material hopefully as, you know, as stuff that actually sells and brings you some income later on down the line.
A rich resource.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's great. Okay, then how'd you get into ghostwriting?
It's something I had a good friend, a lady named Echo Garrett, who's been very, very
I know
successful.
Echo.
You know
in
Echo?
Fact, she's going to be on the show next week.
Yeah, Echo's done very well with her latest book.
Yes, she has. That's why she's going to be back
yeah,
on the show.
Yeah, she's a great resource. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
people need to make sure they listen to her if they want to know how to do a successful
Well, while we're
book.
Plugging her, let me plug that Joel Manby will be on as well.
Okay.
And he's the CEO of Henschfeld Entertainment. Family mm-hmm. Entertainment, they own Stone Mountain. And
oh, okay.
He's coming out with his first book, and both of them have written, and they're going National, amazing. Yeah. So back to your good friend Echo.
But anyway, Echo was the first person kind of giving me some tips and some pointers and some understanding how ghostwriting worked. And I just decided, you know what, there's a lot of people, you know as well as I do, it seems like everybody and their brother has a book idea.
Oh, absolutely.
They might not know what it realistically takes to bring it to press, and they might never actually launch the project, but they all have a book idea.
That's the basis for my business.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Exactly. So I just decided to get into it, and the one thing I had to offer people was a good price. You know, there were other people with more experience, but I'm a good writer. I can, whether it's your personal story or a book about a topic that you're an expert in or whatever, I can do. I always tell people, there's not a lot I can do in life, but I can write. Whatever you need me to write, I can write it. So for me, I've been able to come in, offer, you know, for lack of a better term, I guess maybe discount pricing.
Mm-hmm.
In exchange for people deciding to give me a shot at it. And so far, it's worked really well. You know, I'll be able to raise the price tag here a little bit before too long. But
well,
I just
especially after being on the show, don't
exactly.
you think, Andy?
Absolutely.
I would think. In fact, I'm pretty sure that I'm going to need an agent after being on this show today.
We like to think that.
But I just finished my most recent ghostwriting project. Really, I've only done two, and I just finished my recent ghostwriting project for a gentleman who is one of the state's foremost experts in public education, and he now has a consulting firm. Superintendents often hire him to come in and help them see how to spend their money wisely.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to write a book about how to prepare a winning educational SPLOS proposal that voters can get on board with and that sort of thing. So that's been our most recent project, and he's fortunately been very pleased with that.
You've done two projects. Have you encountered anything that just was similar in them? Do people go into sticker shock? Do they not understand, or do they understand what ghostwriting is?
No, they really don't. They here's what I find. I find people tend to approach me predominantly about one or two projects when it comes to ghostwriting. They either A, want to write a story about their life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've been through something unusual or huge, or maybe they just want to write their memoirs.
Sure.
Or two, they want to write a book about a field in which they want to either or at least want to be perceived as an expert. Those are the two big requests that people bring to me. Number one, they rarely understand the amount of cost involved. That it's, you know, if you want to hire a good writer, it's going to be thousands of dollars to hire someone to write your book. That can cause sticker shock.
That was with an S on the end.
That's
right.
Thousands.
Thank you.
That's plural right there. And then sometimes, as I was telling you off air earlier, then they'll suggest, well, what about, you know, a deal where we share royalties?
And why don't we go there?
The reason we don't go there is because the same reason why major publishers turn down many people who approach them with book projects is, unless you are very well known or have a very broad platform from which to promote your book, it's going to be challenging to create the market. That's not that you can't create a market. That's not that you can't create interest. But you have to understand, it's going to be a process. It's going to be challenging. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of strategy. And for a ghostwriter, we just can't wait that long to take that chance to get paid for the work that we produce. That's why most of the time, unless, like I said, your last name is Winfrey or Obama, if you hire a ghostwriter, most of the time they're not going to go for a royalties deal. They're going to want to be paid a set fee up front that's negotiated up front.
Exactly. And I tell people that with all the books that I have out there, the royalties I accumulate from all those books, I can take my wife out to dinner once a year.
Exactly.
And I am not going to work for royalties.
There you go.
Andy, you look poised at the mic. Are you just trying to keep your head up?
Yeah, I'm just trying to prop up over here. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I had Vanessa last week. She was just, you know, she set a different pace, Dr. Tim.
We're going to turn his mic off.
Come on, you pay me for the color commentary.
That's right. Do you have a question you want to shoot at him?
Yeah, I actually do. So with ghostwriting, I mean, would you recommend to most people out there thinking about writing a book to go that route for their first book, or do you think it's smarter for someone to actually try to get their own thoughts down first and see kind of where they're at before trying to engage someone else to do their writing for them?
Well, I think regardless, you're at some point going to want to sit down and obviously try to get all your thoughts out and write. It obviously differs from person to person whether or not you have a knack for writing at a level that you would feel good about being able to put a book out there that actually looks professional, looks well done, and that people would want to read and could read without going, wow, who wrote this stuff, you know? So it just depends on the situation. I think that the biggest thing is by putting your thoughts out there and trying to write some first, it at least gives you a gauge of where you're at. Do I need to hire someone to just take down to take my information and write the book from scratch? Mm-hmm. Or am I just maybe at a place where I just need someone who can shape it up for me, make it flow a little bit better? Or maybe I'm a good enough writer. I just need a consultant, like I know Tim does sometimes. We're just kind of, I just need you to look at my work, tell me what I could tweak, tell me what I could do differently.
Exactly.
So it just depends on your skill level. It depends on the amount of time you want to invest, and it depends on your financial resources. You might have some people that they could write the whole thing and do a pretty good job themselves, but they got the money, they got other things they'd rather devote their time to, and that sort of thing. I just completed co-writing a book with a gentleman named John Roseman, who's a nationally known parenting expert, best-selling author.
He's listening today, right?
I would hope so. I would certainly hope so. John has written like 20 books, you know, again, best-selling author. He could have written this book on his own. He's got that much knowledge in his head. He's a very good writer. But because of his speaking schedule, because of all that, he knew I was a writer. We're good friends. He was like, Kindred, would you help me write this book? Mostly because he didn't want to have to devote the time to the research involved. He got me for that. And there were certain chapters he just didn't want to write. So I wrote them for him. So there's an example of someone who could have done the whole thing themselves, but for various reasons, they just decided to bring in an outside writer.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
And
so
especially with someone like John Roseman, and he'll take those books with him when he's out speaking.
Yeah, yeah. I just got to send a spy along to make sure he gives me credit or something when he's out there, you know, so
there
make
you
sure
go.
He mentions me.
There you go. That's great. Well, I had mentioned earlier that we were going to insert something, and I have on my copy notes here that it's time to insert. And when I mentioned this to Andy and Kindred before I went on air, I got unmitigated grief. I exposed myself for the old guy that I am. And they said, don't do it that way. Use social media. And I said, I won't tell you what I said. But for those who are listening to the live broadcast versus those who listen to the MP3 later, the first one of you to email me at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com will receive a free autographed copy of Kindred's newest book. That's the one with the long name, Cavemen in Babyland, What New and Expecting Mummies Should Know About New Daddies So That They Won't Kill Them. I'm holding the book in my hand as I speak. It's already signed. So you send me an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. I'll look at the timestamp. First person gets it. And going forward, we hope to do this. We intend to do this with all of our guests, that have them bring in a signed copy, which we will give to the first person who likes us, right?
That's right. We'll get it on the social media.
Generate some excitement, right?
There you go. And just to say this, that book was written, you know, What New and Expecting Mommies Should Know About New Daddies So That They Won't Kill Them. I have 5 children. That book was written from all of my own near-death experiences. So I just took everything that I did that made my wife want to kill me when she was pregnant or during the first year with the baby, put it in a book to try and help somebody else. So hopefully we can save a young father's life with
so
that book right
this
there.
This is a life-saving book.
That is my intention. That is definitely my intention. So,
oh, man, you just trigger all kinds of ideas. So now that we've done that, talk to me about the book. Talk to us all about the book. This is your third type of writing. You've done the ghost writing, you've done the textbook, and now this is a quote-unquote real book. This is Kindred sitting down and writing.
This is the first book I've been able to write about that, which is my biggest passion, which is marriage and family. Like I mentioned, I was in the ministry for 11 years, worked, you know, a lot counseling couples with marriages, parents with parental issues, with their kids, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I decided to start Family Upward. I mentioned John Roseman. He was actually one of the people who really encouraged me to start Family Upward in late 2010. And really, you know, go after making a business out of trying to help families, mm-hmm. which is my passion, working with couples on marriage issues, parents with the behavioral issues with their kids, what have you. I started writing this book a few years ago when I had 3 children. I now have 5. My twins
you needed some
turned
more
2
material,
yesterday.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh,
but there's actually a good lesson for people thinking about writing their own book in this. when I started, and it's a lesson in marketing. When I started writing this book, I originally was going to write the book geared towards young fathers and young husbands. You know, a book, mm-hmm. advice to them about being a good dad, that sort of thing. Well, I wasn't long in the process. I started doing some blogging to help build interest for the book.
Mm-hmm.
And very early in the process, I began to notice that while there were guys who would read it and really liked it, liked the blog, the people who kept really commenting and coming back and reading again and again and just getting a kick out of the things I was writing were the moms, were the women.
Wow.
And it suddenly occurred to me and dawned on me, you know, wait a minute. Guys don't really buy parenting and relationship books.
That's true.
Women do.
Mm-hmm.
Moms do. And that's when I switched gears and decided I'm not going to make this a book to young dads about how to be a dad. I'm going to make this a book to young moms about how to understand what's going on in the mind and hearts of the young dads that they're married to and raising kids with. Because women read these kind of books, and they're always trying to figure us out anyway. So I might as well write a book that gives them the inside mm-hmm. scoop. So that's to me, is a good example of how when you're writing, you got to think about who's your market audience going to be? Who are you going to sell the
exactly.
book to? Are they going to want to buy it? And I've had so many people, some of the nation's best mommy bloggers, several of the people that I've approached with the book to get exposure and have gotten the book in the hands of, who have just been, we love the concept. We've never seen a relationship book like this before, giving pregnant and new mommies an inside scoop on what new dads are thinking. What an intelligent concept. So, you know, that's one of the things I always tell people when they're wanting to launch that book idea. You got to think about your market audience, and mm-hmm. you got to think about your book as a business. It's, you can't just think about it as an artistic endeavor if your goal is to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
If your goal is to sell it, you got to think about it as a business, and how to market it and who you're marketing to is a huge part of any business.
And that you had to make a dramatic shift when you realized what you needed to go.
Yeah, fortunately, I was about a third of the way into it. There were mm-hmm. still a lot of stories I could use, still a lot of illustrations I could use, and the book was still going to be written with a great deal of humor, which was always my plan. But how I packaged it and how I directed it, and it also created some additional topics as well that I had originally not intended to hit on because of the angle we were going.
How does your wife feel about this?
Well, you know what? My wife is always one of my first proofreaders.
Uh-huh.
She's very good with that. Also, too, she was like, okay, you're writing a book about us. I got to read this one before it goes out, buddy. So she loves it. She's the book's biggest fan. She thinks it's hilarious. She thinks the story. And that was the biggest thing Meredith told me as I was marketing a book to young moms. Mm-hmm. She said, Kindred, if you do nothing else, make them laugh. Young moms need to laugh. Couples, if they're experiencing tension in their relationship, you got to help them keep their sense of humor about it as you're trying to give them advice about it. So she's been a huge part of the book coming to fruition and a huge part of the book's success. And she's the book's biggest fan. Most of the time, she's the one on the social media, on the emails, promoting the book, promoting the things we're doing and making stuff happen. And I just write stuff. She makes stuff happen. Oh, yeah.
We
oh,
like
yeah.
that. That's
great.
That's
right, yeah.
Well, can you share one or two of your near-death experiences?
Well, one of the things I think I had to learn very early on in marriage, and this especially was true when your wife is pregnant or just had a baby and she's dealing with all that transition and the hormones and sometimes the insecurity of all that, is if your wife says something or asks a question, she doesn't necessarily want an honest answer. You know, when I'm with my guy friends, and most of the time, you know, somebody ask a question like, it could be anything, you know, or they make a comment about how they look or something. They want an honest opinion. They want an honest answer. And so as guys, we start learning to communicate that way. If a pregnant woman looks at you and says, do I look like I've gained weight? She doesn't want an honest answer necessarily. She's smart enough. She already knows the honest answer. She wants an encouraging answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as guys, sometimes we make the mistake of going, you know, well, yeah, you gained some weight, but you're pregnant. That's to be expected. Don't worry about it. Bad answer. That's a great recipe for, you know, a self-made peanut butter and jelly sandwich for dinner and a couple of nights sleeping alone on the couch if you're not careful.
Okay.
So you have to learn how to read the signs a little bit, understand when there needs to be encouragement there, when she's really looking for encouragement and to feel better as opposed to just give me the facts, you know. So a lot of the book is about communication. and how men and women tend to communicate differently, and how if we can learn how each other communicates and trust each other's intentions a lot, that can do a lot to help the relationship. And so the message in all that, that kind of scenario to the wives and the women would be, trust that he's probably not trying to be an insensitive jerk. He's wanting to give you what you need. He just needs some help from you to tell him what that is and help him understand what you need a little
bit.
Okay. Right. And worse, in that scenario that you described, it's not even about the answer. It's the fractional seconds before the answer. If you wait too long, if you hesitate, if you get a questionable look on your face before you give the encouraging answer, she's already gotten your answer.
You've
answered before you said a word.
Exactly. So you got to figure those things out as you go a little bit, you know.
Now, you said when you started writing this, you had 3 children, and now you're up to 5. Did the addition of the other 2 add to the book as you went along?
Yeah, I was still writing the book, so I was able to definitely include them and add that in. And my youngest 2 are actually adopted. So we have our 3 oldest, my daughter and my 2 oldest sons, are we had biologically. They're ages 9, 6, and 4. And then in 2010, my wife and I decided to pursue a dream we'd always had to eventually adopt. We both had a heart for orphan children and wanting to believe that the Bible taught a lot about, you know, remembering the orphans, and that if we were, that was a big part of our faith. And so we set out originally, we thought, well, we'll adopt a little girl. We had a girl and 2 boys. We'll adopt a little girl, maybe about 18 months or older. We don't want to really do a baby again. We've done that stage. So naturally, we ended up adopting 2 infant boys. We got an email from our adoption agency that went out to several people just saying, we've got these 5-month-old infant boys. They're in very serious condition. You know, their condition might worsen. They might not make it if we don't find a home for them quickly. And almost immediately, my wife saw the email, saw the boys. It was like, these are our sons. We've got to do this. So we did a little bit of research, found out what we could, and made the decision to go for it. And in 2010, God blessed us with the addition of our sons, Samuel and Asher, who I am happy to say today are healthy, happy, and running around like typical toddlers. Like I said, they just turned 2 years old on Monday. And through a really fluke encounter with the casting director, also made their movie debut this month. They played Jennifer Lopez's son in the movie What to Expect When You're Expecting. They play the little boy she adopts in the movie. So it's been quite a ride. Yeah, quite a ride.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, how did that happen?
Oh, totally nuts. This was last summer, and my wife just told me one day, said, I got an email from a friend who knew we had adopted from Ethiopia saying, hey, they're filming a movie here in Atlanta, and apparently they need extras, children who were born in Ethiopia as extras. So my wife ran it by me, and on a whim, we just said, yeah, sure, go ahead and send it in. Could be fun to be on a set for the day. My wife was also thinking, well, hey, there'll be other people of Ethiopian culture there. It's actually a big Ethiopian community in Atlanta. So at the very least, we can meet people from their culture, maybe build some relationships that can help the boys long-term there. And so she sent it in, and then to our surprise, the casting director himself called back that day saying, I saw the picture of your boys, like to talk to you. We went down. The next day, he had us come down, meet the director, Kirk Jones. He loved the boys, was enthralled by their story, where they'd come from, almost dying in this Ethiopian orphanage, to now being in the States healthy and kind of out of the danger zone. And then later that night, we got a phone call saying, we'd love for your sons to play this part. If you're up for it, could you come down tomorrow and spend some time with Jennifer Lopez?
And let's think about
that. Yeah, so I told him, I said, well, you know, I think I got a 12 o'clock with Robert De Niro, but I'll try to move it. And so we went down, and we ended up spending, you know, about 8 days on a movie set while they shot the scenes they needed to shoot. So it was a great experience, and we were fortunate. The people involved were all great people who loved the twins. So it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And my wife and I actually got to go to the premiere last week, about 2 weeks ago, in L.A. So it was fun to go out there and play movie star for a night.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about in Caveman in Babyland. How did this differ, if in any way, in your writing compared to the textbooks, the ghostwriting, all the other stuff you've done?
Oh, well, this is much more what I wanted in this book. And again, you have to take your audience and what you're trying to accomplish in mind. Caveman in Babyland is a very informal, conversational kind of book. kind of dialogue mm-hmm. that goes on. It's very down to earth. I've had several people tell me one of the things they loved about the book was I read it easily in 2 days. It's over 200 pages, but they said I read it easily in 2 days because it just flows. It's very conversational. It's very down to earth. I did a radio interview a couple of weeks ago with a South Carolina station, and the guy said something that I thought was very accurate. He said, you know, I would describe this book as almost Irma Bombeck-like in its tone.
Okay.
And yeah. I said, I've not heard that before. That's a good way to describe
sure.
it. That kind of, that's a very good way to describe it. Whereas, obviously, the social studies book, much more formal, much more in line with holding to, you know, mm-hmm. I guess, standard in that case with that publishing company, Chicago-style writing, that okay. sort of thing. That's another thing I tell people with writing sometimes is because a lot of people almost get paralyzed into doing nothing because they're so concerned about the grammatical rules
oh,
and all
yeah.
those things. And I say, here's the thing. Most of your readers don't know the grammatical rules anyway. So as long as you do a pretty good job, you're not totally off the reservation, and you're consistent,
mm-hmm.
you know, that exactly. whatever you decide to go with remains consistent throughout the book, you're probably going to be okay. So like for in this book, I purpose, there may be, and I can't recall what they might be off the top of my head, but there may be a couple of grammatical rules that I purposely just break the rule because I feel like it helps the book flow better and more conversational
mm-hmm.
like I want,
mm-hmm.
which is okay as long as you're consistent throughout. What readers start picking up on is inconsistency more so than
yeah, exactly.
total accuracy.
Well, you mentioned that you also have written articles for magazines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit.
I've gotten the opportunity to write, and again, a lot of this goes back to, you know, when you're wanting to write as a career, when
mm-hmm.
you're wanting to write for a living, especially early on, the more versatile you can be, the better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I write articles for magazines and publications and blogs. That's one of the things now. Blogging is very big, even with businesses. They
sure
want
is.
Writers to write blog stuff because it helps with the search engine optimization
mm-hmm.
and those sorts of things. I've also written websites for companies, still write websites for companies, write web content, write, you know, brochures, anything people will pay you to write. You know, if the more you can branch into different areas, the more you can establish yourself, pay the bills, and then hopefully get to a point where, like with Cavemen and Babyland, you can write about the things you really want to focus on writing.
Mm-hmm.
But with the magazine articles, I've written for the Huffington Post, I've written for Today's Parent, which is Canada's biggest parenting magazine,
mm-hmm.
written for Atlanta Parent on a number of occasions, won a couple of awards writing for Atlanta Parent, have written for a number of, you know, local newspapers. And I still have a monthly column that I write for free for Brightside News over in the Marietta area. And I do that because it gives me a chance to write about family-related issues, gives me a chance to promote Family Upward a little bit. And it goes to about 50,000 homes every month.
Well, that's not bad.
No.
Well, let's give you a chance to promote that. Talk to us about your Family Upward. What's it about?
Yeah, well, like I was saying, Family Upward, marriage, parent, and family life coaching, it's basically family counseling. I call it coaching because, you know, I'm not a licensed therapist. I'm not a psychologist. Don't try to play myself off to be any of that. My experience comes from 11 years in the ministry, the work I've done working under and learning a lot from John Roseman. And I always tell people my best credentials. In fact, I've been married 15 years and have 5 kids. You learn a lot just practically banging your head into some walls sometimes when you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
what I do is I work with there's two predominant things that I do through Family Upward. One is I work one-on-one with clients. I work one-on-one with couples who need help either with marriage issues or maybe they're thinking of getting married and they want some kind of premarital counseling. I work with parents who are having issues with their children, often behavioral issues, not always, but it's often behavioral issues, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we just talk about practical, common sense, historically proven attitudes and principles and sometimes, yes, methods that can be instituted to help with those situations. But the other thing I do is public speaking. I like to go into churches, schools, be it the PTAs or some other group, civic organizations, even business associations have had me in to speak to people before on family-related issues, be it marriage, parenting, or what have you. Whether it be a one-time speaking engagement or whether it be a multi-session seminar. And then I do a lot of radio interviews. I've done radio interviews all over the country on these type of topics as well. So,
but nothing nearly as classy as Business Radio X and Reiki.
No, nothing nearly so impressive as this.
So, just out of curiosity, you said in your book you market to the young or the expecting mother. What about with your speaking and you know going into these businesses and doing these public talks or maybe events? Mm-hmm. Are you finding that your audience is different there? Are you finding that that's the place where you can engage the fathers?
Yeah, yeah. And don't get me wrong. There's a lot in the book even that fathers need to hear and ought to hear. The way I sell it in the book, as I say in the introduction, I tell the moms, there's a lot of stuff in here that fathers need to hear and understand. But this is where me and the mom reading the book, work together. I provide the information. You provide the best. Honey, if you love me, you'll listen to me while I read this to you, tone of voice. You know, that type. As guys, that's when we read these kind of books, when our wife tells us she'd really like us to or shows us something. But when it comes to the speaking engagement, it just depends on the crowd. Like, for instance, if I'm speaking at one of the business associations, a lot of times I'll talk on a topic related to how do you pursue being a successful entrepreneur without sacrificing your family in the process. And what are some of the priorities you need to set? What are some of the costs you're going to need to count? What are some of the hard decisions you're going to probably find yourself having to make? You know, that sort of thing. Then there was, for instance, there was a conglomeration of several businesses in Cobb County a couple months ago who they all market to families with small children. So they decided as a service to their clientele, why don't we put together a series of parenting seminars? And they hired me to come in and do the seminars. So there I was talking mostly to parents, all of which I knew who had small children, because that's who these businesses, that's their demographic. So I focused predominantly on the parenting issues that you face when your kids are younger and when they're smaller. Sometimes I might be speaking to a group where I know we're talking to parents, and there's a lot of teenage parents of teenagers out there and want to talk to them. So it's just about knowing the group and knowing what kind of message is appropriate for them. And what they want me to focus on and what they want me to talk about. And then I have a church right now that's about to bring me on to do a series of seminars for them. So obviously when I speak to them, I'll include a lot of the biblical references and the biblical justifications for what I'm saying and how that all relates. So I speak to, for lack of a better term, secular groups quite often, but I also speak to churches and Christian groups quite often as well.
Well, let's give a plug to the business organization that helped me find you. You and I, our companies, are both members of the Cobb Chamber.
Yeah, the Cobb Chamber.
And I asked them, who are authors that you know of? And I got your info, and here we are. Look at that.
That's right.
So that allows me to ask the question I ask everybody that sits in one of these two chairs. How has being an author impacted your business?
They definitely feed off one another, because a lot of times it is through my writing, whether mm-hmm. it be the monthly articles or writing for the parent magazines or Cavemen in Babyland, the book has garnered me a lot of radio interviews and things like that, where people can hear about me and hear about my business. And so they mm-hmm. end up coming to me then for the public speaking engagements or for the personal coaching that they need in a family-related matter. But then conversely, I go to speaking engagements or I get with people or what have you, and at those speaking engagements, people hear me speak, and then they see I've got the book over there on the book table, and they want to buy the book. So it just kind of,
it's nice to be able to do that, isn't it?
Yeah, it works kind of in a circle. You know, mm-hmm. they kind of feed one another. And going back to the ghostwriting thing, more and more people who do public speaking and who speak at seminars in whatever field they are an expert in are beginning to realize there's a lot of value in showing up at those engagements with a book that they've written.
And it even begins sooner when they contact the organization. How about letting me come speak? And oh, by the way, I have a book.
Exactly. When you say book, the world hears expert.
Mm-hmm.
There might be another guy who knows 50 times what you know about the topic, but he doesn't have a book. You've got one, so everyone looks at you and goes, well, this guy's got a book. He must know what he's talking about.
And
so there's a lot of value, and people are realizing there's a lot of value in having a publication. And I just thank God that we live in a day and age where you can self-publish.
Absolutely.
You know, it used to be a few decades ago or whatever, not that long ago, if you couldn't sell your book to a publisher, your dream or your idea was dead in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case anymore. Now you can self-publish. Many times it's more profitable to self-publish.
Absolutely.
And if you self-publish and show them you can sell it, because you know as well as I do, Tim, that the end of the day, that's the only question publishers are concerned with.
Mm-hmm.
Show me you can sell it. If you can self-publish it and show you can sell it, publishers will come calling pretty quickly.
And that's part of what we're going to hear from Echo next week, because she co-authored the My Orange Duffel Bag.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of self-published it.
It was a self-published. Yeah.
And sold Boku books, and now Random House has picked it up, an arm of Random House. And I think I saw they have sold in the tens of thousands of copies pre-publication mm-hmm. already. So that's a case of what you were just talking about, somebody who really put it in for self-publishing and made it happen.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exciting. You have been a cornucopia of information today.
Hopefully some of it good.
It's big word day.
Yeah, it is.
I've gotten cornucopia. I've gotten genre. This has been a good word day for me.
We've done our best. Well, you know what we need to do now is people want to be in contact with you. They want to ask about Family Upward, about your book, about having you come speak. How do they get in touch with you?
Well, they're welcome to contact me. Anything regarding Family Upward, marriage, parent, family life coaching. Again, one thing I didn't mention, I'm sure they would probably be interested in, is our rates are a lot cheaper than most, you know, counselors you would hire, that sort of thing. We charge $65 per session, not per hour, per session. A session may be 2 hours. You're still going to pay the same mm-hmm. price. So they're welcome to contact me through the website, familyupward.com. familyupward.com. Both the phone number and our email is there. If they're interested in the book, Cavemen in Babyland can make a great gift for new and expecting moms. They can get it on Amazon and the traditional online distributors, but they can also go to cavemeninbabyland.com, cavemeninbabyland.com, order it there. They'll even have the opportunity if they order it through that website, where they can leave us some instruction, and I can even make the book out to whoever they want me to make it out to, sign it for them, and then send it off.
Well, that's sweet. Your wife is doing a great job of marketing.
You know what? My wife, 6 weeks ago, started a blog about the twins with the movie coming out and everything. She just started a blog called OurSammyAndAsher.com. OurSammyAndAsher.com. If anyone wants to learn more about the twins and their journey, they can go there. Some great inspirational stuff, just where they've come from and what all has happened their first 2 years of life. But she's had the blog up for 6 weeks. She's already gotten over 11,000 hits.
Oh, my.
I was at a network meeting this morning with a guy who has an online SEO advertising mm-hmm. business for a living, and he was boasting about the fact that in their first 6 months, they've had about 10,000 hits. She's had over 11,000 in 6 weeks. Just because
she's
the top
good.
Of the, she's good.
She's good.
Real
you
good.
Guys
I'm,
are good.
I married well. I married well above my head. I knew that before, but this just confirms it.
We'll erase this part from the interview, right?
Well, yeah, don't let it come back to be used against me in a court of law. There you go.
Yeah, she's probably already recorded this snippet and filed it away.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I just glanced at the clock, and I can say the clock is on us. And this has been amazing, Kindred. One guest, we've taken as much time as I usually take with two, and it's been fun.
Well, I tell you what, you give a microphone to an ex-preacher, and you better look out.
Are you aware that I used to be one of those two?
The impression earlier, because you said something that made me wonder. Well, he may have been in the ministry before.
25 years.
Yeah, okay.
Well, we just never know when to shut up, do we?
See, I need to be around you more. You've written longer than me. You were in the ministry longer than me. There's a lot I could learn from you, I'm sure.
That's for after the show. Well, we welcome your comments and suggestions about the content and about our guests. And if you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Just simply send me an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Andy, for handling the controls.
Always a pleasure.
I appreciate it. And thank you to our guest, Kindred Howard. Kindred, one more time, your contact information.
Again, you can reach me at familyupward.com. Go to familyupward.com. There's a phone number there, as well as an email. However you want to contact us, be more than happy to hear from you.
Great. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at www.righte-choiceservices.com. I hope you will join us next week and tell your friends about the show. As I mentioned earlier, next week we're going to have Echo Garrett and Joel Manby. Send your friends an email right now and invite them to listen live or to the downloads when they